This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture with me, Dashran Johan. A recent report by UNICEF titled Our Lives Online, the Use of Social Media by Children and Adolescents in East Asia, states that 2 out of 5 children reported having bad experiences online they would not want to tell anyone about. The study also found that many young boys and girls are being sent and or being asked to send explicit pictures. So what we're going to be doing today is discuss the findings of the report in detail, as well as what we can do to better protect children online. But as always, I can't do this alone. So to help me unpack everything, I'm joined in the studio by Datin Wong, the Honorary Project Director of the Childline Foundation, and Lim Yu Kin, the Childline's Child Advocate and the EXO of the PJ Child Council. Welcome to the show. How are you all doing?
Thank you very much. Yeah, doing well.
Hi, you can hear doing well as well. Thank you.
Fantastic. Okay, so to begin, Datin, maybe we can start with you. Can you help break down what exactly this study is all about?
Yeah, I think in 2019, UNICEF East Asia and Pacific was very concerned about the fact that 1 in 3 children, internet users were children, you know. And if you look at the statistics in Malaysia, it's 98.2%. And out of that, 91% of them have smartphones. So students have access to social media, and it's a large number. So the East Asia Pacific office in Bangkok then commissioned a study that went across 4 countries: Cambodia, Thailand, Malaysia, and Indonesia. There were about 301 children who were part of focus group discussions, and there were also interviews with the frontline workers like parents and teachers and psychologists in those 4 countries. Malaysia had about 127 children. And what's important about Malaysia statistics was that it was done across very varied groups of children. We had street children, we had children from SMK schools, we had refugee children, we had blind and deaf children as well. So it's really across the board. So it's very interesting what the findings came out with, you know. So hopefully this will help to, you know, the government and as well as policymakers to look at how we can strategize to make it safer for children in Malaysia.
And what are some of the findings you think are key to the study?
Of course, the main thing is that internet access. Well, almost all of the kids have internet access, and more so during the MCO. Before the MCO, they were already accessing the internet, you know, at least 92%. But during MCO, it's gone much higher than that because everybody's going on to e-learning, and also they're not physically in school, right? One of the findings that came out was there were 2 main things that we looked at. One is the impact for parents, what it means for parents, and the other one is for the children, right? For the children, we were looking at how they use social media. What are the harms? What are the opportunities they have? What are the harms, and what are the issues that arise from their use of social media? Were they aware of the harm? Were they able to then tackle issues when they came across it? And what we found out was that, like I said, 2 out of 5 children will not speak to anyone about problems. Even out of 10 have come across something that upsets them online, but 2 out of 5 will not have anyone, will not tell anyone, right, Yukin?
Yeah,
maybe you can tell us, would you go to your parent? Would you go to your teachers?
Right. Honestly, as a youth and from our past engagement sessions, we find that almost none of the children would go to their parents or to any adults when they're facing issues. They would rather talk to their friends because it's easier for them to express themselves and their friends understand what they're going through as well. But yeah, it is quite scary to think that 2 out of 5 children don't want to tell anyone, you know, about some of the issues they face online. And it really makes you question what could be that bad? You know, what could be that shameful that they would not want to share it with anyone?
And you say 2 out of 5 children don't want to tell anyone about it. So I've got a double layer question in that regard. So first of all, what sort of bad experiences are we talking about here? And why don't these kids want to tell anyone about it?
Right, so some bad experiences that are in question would, for example, be like what Datin Wong previously stated about receiving explicit unsolicited pictures. For example, pictures of some older men's or females' genitalia, right? Mm. Which were not really asked for, but because of some predators online, they would share it to those children. And how, and as a child, how would you tell someone that, you know, you received a nude online? Yeah. And what could anyone else do about it? So that's one reason why children don't really tell anyone, because we often don't see what's the point in it.
Mm.
Is it for self-pity? Is it to get support? And it's scary as well to tell people.
Yep.
Is there also a concern that a lot of children face, maybe you or your friends, people younger than you, where they feel that they don't want to tell their parents in fear of repercussions? They fear that their parents might think they are in the wrong. They might be doing something in the wrong. Is there that sort of mindset as well?
Definitely. Especially for, I guess, Asian parenting, I guess. It's a lot about what your child has done. Like, how could you have done better as a parent? What your child has done wrong?
Actually, I think it's a question of trust, right? And one of the things that we found out that children told us during the study was that some of them, and also during some of the workshops we've had with children over the before the report was launched, was that some of the parents actually take their children's handphones at the end of the week and inspect them. But the thing is, the children said, we know how to delete before we give those phones to our parents. So the kids are really smarter in many ways, and they find ways around it. Many of them said they do know the parents' passwords, because the parents, some of them, ask them to set the passwords.
Okay.
And even if they don't know, they know how to get around it. So the kids are finding ways, you know, on how to get around all the bans that the parents put in.
Yeah, because I think a lot of times these kids are way more tech-savvy than their parents.
Which
right?
is very true. And which is why one of the findings in the report was that there's a great need to enable and to educate parents, especially young parents, on the technology, yeah, and how children are using technology. What are they assessing, right? So one of the exercises during the at the focus group was that we asked the kids, how many apps do you know? And each group would come up with, the most, I think, was 230.
230 apps?
Yeah. And some of it, we have not heard of it.
And what are they doing online?
Yeah.
When you say they are spending an exuberant amount of time online, what are these teens and children doing exactly? Is it gaming? Is it social media?
Right. So through our findings and through engagement sessions and research with different focus groups, we find that the most popular activity that children go online for is to socialize through
networking. To make friends.
Yeah, to make friends through networking apps, through chatting apps like Facebook, Telegram, WhatsApp, Instagram, you know, all of those.
Yeah.
Actually, the research found that 97% of children went online to socialize, right? Besides that, children also go online for entertainment, you know. We play games, we watch videos, you know. And also, some children go online for research, for their education, for online learning. Because honestly, anything is possible to find online with just like through
Definitely.
A few clicks
just have
of a
to
button.
Google it, right?
Yeah, just have to Google it. You don't have to go. Gone are the days, you know, you go to library and spend hours looking for...
Those were my days.
Yeah. Like finding a particular piece of information. Now you just have to search whatever you want online.
Yeah.
We were born, like, this generation, Generation Z, I guess, was born into social media. When we were growing up, social media started with us, you know what I mean? And now, actually, our lives, you know, without social media, it's like a taboo. You know, without going online, that's, like, weird, you know, to hear someone is not online at this age.
But are these, you know, 10-year-olds, is this what 10-year-olds are doing as well, like 11-year-olds, 12-year-olds? Are you talking about 16, 17-year-olds?
Oh, no, definitely 10-year-olds, even younger.
We're talking about younger, although, you know the age for FB is 13 and odds. We know a lot of younger kids have them.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, and of course, the concern now is that even in the early childhood field, the children below 6, parents, I think there's a great need to also educate parents, and also the fact that children are putting on... One of the concerns in the report was that parents were concerned about the amount of screen time and the frontline workers that we engaged with were also concerned about the fact that the screen time was overwhelming.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, from the age they are 2, 3, sometimes they are babies, they are on screen time. That's a concern because they're not assessing other developmental areas which we traditionally had, right, which is a physical development, going out to play with your friends, their social interaction. I think the report also, that the concern was also about the psychosocial mental health of the children, because they're online almost 80-90% of the time. There was a concern also about the lack of sleep, which then impacts on their school life. Correct or not?
Definitely. I went nights without sleeping because of social media.
The addiction to the games and all that was another concern as well.
And is there anything about this study that you found perhaps surprising?
Well, one of the things that it was the same whether it was boys or girls. And we're talking about girls and boys across different income levels. We're talking about girls within and boys within refugee areas. They were accessing internet the same as any other child. Yeah. I mean, even in the PPR flats, they were. As long as they have a device, they were able to play their games, PUBG and, you know, what is that, Mobile Legends?
Yeah, yeah.
And so that was one. The other one was that they knew how to... go around blocked sites, through private virtual networks and things like that. So that's why I think the parents have to be aware that, you know, these are things that the kids do know. So you need to be able to also see how you can facilitate that. But more important is having an open communication. One of the reasons why the kids are not talking to their parents is because there's no, like I said, the Asian parenting is, you know, they will shut down or take away the phone. Yeah, instead of talking to the kids about what are the harms and the risks,
yes,
and what can you do about it, who can you report to?
Equip them with the knowledge,
correct,
so they can make informed decisions.
Yes,
right. So Datin said that, you know, she found certain aspects like the fact that everyone, regardless of their social, where they come from, their background and everything, everyone's playing Mobile Legends and using so and going on social media. I'm guessing you didn't find that as surprising?
Honestly, after reading the report, I honestly, as a child, was not surprised at all. I guess it's a bit concerning as well, because some of the statistics here are a bit disturbing. Like how we stated previously, you know, 2 out of 5 children are reported having bad experiences online that they would not want to tell anyone about. And actually, more than half of the teenagers who met people initially online, you know, they actually met them in real life. More than half of them.
Yeah, that's a concern.
Yeah, more than half of them actually went out and met people they met online in real life.
And we are talking about teens and children here.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so we have to dive into that a little bit more. But for now, we do need to take a quick break. This is Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture. I'm Dashran Johan, and I'm joined by Datin Wong, the Honorary Project Director of the Childline Foundation, and Lim Yu Kin, who is the Childline's Child Advocate, as well as the EXO of the PJ Child Council. And we are having a discussion on the use of social media by children and adolescents in the region and how we can better protect them when they go online. So, you can, before the break, you brought up something very interesting, which is that children are meeting people online before they meet them in real life, right? We are talking about friends, perhaps relationships. Let's talk about that a little bit more. What can you tell us about online friendships and relationships and the patterns that is going on right now?
I guess, you know, meeting people online is the new norm for us children and teenagers, youth actually, because, you know, honestly, it's a lot less intimidating to meet someone online rather in real life. You know, in real life, you don't have time to think, you don't have time to, you know, control what you're saying. So online, you can be whoever you want to be, you know, and you can find... You can, you know, make sure that, how do I phrase this? You can be the ideal, like an ideal person, like the ideal version of yourself. You can be the best version of yourself. You know, you don't have to be judged based on your looks, you know, like online, someone could view you a certain way and that might make you feel insecure. But online, you can be whoever and anyone you want. And that's a bit scary as well, because as it works for children, it also works for predators online.
Yes.
So honestly, you cannot be 100% sure who you're talking to online most of the time.
Yeah.
But even though that's still being said, we as children still resort to, you know, making friends online, because it's A, the easiest, and I guess what we are most comfortable with.
And when you say making friends online, what are you talking about here? Are you talking about people adding each other on Facebook and just randomly talking to each other that way? Or are you talking about them going to a particular forum, chat rooms? Is it through games?
It's exactly, kind of exactly what you said, but it's not Facebook. Honestly, most of us don't use Facebook. We
so what, yeah, Facebook
because the
is
parents
out of fashion
on Facebook. Yeah. Yeah, because they know parents are on Facebook and so they're in Instagram.
Okay.
Facebook is kind of like the older generation.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so now you put things in perspective for me. I'm the older generation. What is going on?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, so how we actually meet people online, right? There are apps where you can actually trade your Snapchats. And for people who don't know what Snapchat is, it's basically this application where you can send timed pictures to each other and they disappear after that, right? So there's apps where you can trade Snapchats with whoever you want online. You can, and you can actually follow whoever you want online on Instagram as well, and they'll follow you back and you can just start messaging from there. So it's really not a question about how we do it, it's just when we do it. There's so many ways for you to communicate online and make friends. And meet people, I guess.
And one of the things that the study found that when the teens met or the children met their online friend offline, they were very disappointed because it wasn't like the profile that they saw, you know, was like, you know, it's a different person, you know. And that's where the danger is.
Yeah.
You know, particularly for girls, you know, and as well as boys, is you never know who you're meeting. So it's worrying that 50% are meeting their online friends in real life.
And what you brought up is something that I found very interesting, is that the biggest disappointment that a lot of these children and young, maybe young adults, teens, find is that, you know, the people they meet doesn't match their profile photo or how they thought, maybe how good-looking they thought they would be. But that is such a trivial thing to be worried about, because the bigger concern I'm thinking is when you think you're talking to a 15-year-old and when you go, there's a, you know, uncle, 50-year-old uncle waiting there in the park. I think that why aren't kids feeling like that is the bigger concern rather than however the person looks like?
Well, actually, generally in the study with the 300 children, it was stated that clearly at the moment, those kids were meeting people who were like their school friends and friends that of their age. And generally, they felt that if it's women, it's female, it's safer.
Okay.
Which may not be the case, right? So I think it's a matter of how, you know, how children navigate social media and whether they know how to do it safely. They know they have the skills to be able to decide what is a good, you know, a good choice and a bad choice. That's why we need to build that resilience in them offline and not just for online.
Yeah.
To add on to what Dati Wong said, why children don't actually... it's not like a huge concern over who we meet online. It's because also another problem we face, you know, especially during the MCO is loneliness, right? Children are experiencing another magnitude, I guess, of loneliness because we are so used to so much stimulation a day, especially on social media. Like how I was stating before, why Facebook is not a children's app is because of how slow-paced it is, you know?
Okay.
On Instagram, you can post stories, you can post, and like you're updated with someone's life every day. And so you're like constantly stimulated. So during the MCO, you don't really get to see your friends and you don't really get to do anything. So that really caused a lot of teens actually to become very lonely. And some also became depressed during the MCO because they were locked up, right? They were kind of locked up. So what the only thing we could resort to doing is meeting people online. And while most of us understand that who we are meeting online is not who they actually are, right? That it still, you know, fulfills that sense of loneliness and longing for to talk to someone and connect with someone.
Right. And another thing that I wanted to bring up is that, you know, you mentioned apps like Instagram, Snapchat, you know, exchanging photos that disappear. But are children going on apps like Tinder, Coffee Meets Bagel, Bumble? Are they trying to look for relationships on these type of apps?
I don't see why not, you know? It's like you said, people are not being verified online. Mm-hmm. Like there's no thorough process of to determine who
it's
is...
It's easy way to find friends, you know? And
I mean, it's for dating, but like...
Yeah.
I guess even though children know it's for dating, I guess it's a sense of curiosity. Because online, you do hear about online dating and you do hear about online relationships and stuff like that. So I don't see why children cannot just make an account and just talk and start online dating, I guess, with people.
I think what the danger is when a lot of them in the study also said that they receive sexual images and messages. And that's where we want them to be able to know, you know, what to do, yeah, once they receive such messages. Malaysia has just launched a portal to take down sexual images of children online.
Okay.
And that's done with the Internet Watch Foundation of UK. So there is a portal that's http://report.iwf.org.uk/my. So anyone in Malaysia can report. And the shocking thing is the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children in the USA reported that there were almost 178,000 downloads from Malaysian.
That's terrifying.
Yeah. So that's why the portal was launched, so that anyone in Malaysia, even children or adults, see any sexual images of children, not adults, but just children, can then just click and report on that portal. I think it's extremely important, particularly that this study has found that children are receiving unsolicited sexual images.
Wow.
And because they don't have enough, I think in Malaysia, we do not have enough sexual reproductive health education or sex education. They really don't know what to do with it. And they could, if they're very young, they could also be groomed.
Yeah. Also adding on to the spread of indecent images of children online, to relate it back to the whole online dating for children, you know, children going on Tinder and Bumble and stuff like that, right? So sometimes these children actually use pictures of themselves,
yep.
And there are adults who actually are attracted to this younger look, right? Or they know that they're children and purposely swipe right start talking to them.
Yeah, and that's what the Internet Watch Foundation had just found recently, that a lot of the images were self-generated by children themselves.
Yeah. Often online, especially on all these dating platforms, children using them can be coerced, I guess, can be convinced into sending a new image of themselves so that they can feel, I guess, a sense of acceptance and validation from the other person. Yeah, so oftentimes we children think we are more mature than we actually are, and we think we have, we have everything under control. Hence, we send some indecent images sometimes.
Because at that age, you're not thinking about the psychological implications of what that's going to do to you 10 years down the road and all these kinds of things, right?
Yep.
Okay, apart from sexually explicit images, what other dangerous sort of patterns are you seeing when it comes to children online? I think you brought up something very interesting during the Facebook Live launch of this report.
Yeah.
You talked about the sort of dangerous trends. Can you give us some examples of these dangerous trends?
So trends are things that become popular online and are usually shared among people rapidly, right? So some trends we see recently would be the blue whale challenge. So
what is that?
So basically what happened is you would get this number, right? And then you would text this number, and that number is the blue whale, right? So what happened is that number will send you challenges to do. And once you complete those challenges, you start advancing, right? It's like a game. But then progressively, these challenges get more and more dangerous, as it includes drug abuse, self-harm, harming others, and things like that. And because it's a trend, we feel we want to be included into something, right? And to be part of something bigger. So we'll start doing all these things. And if, our parents don't know what we're doing online, we can just do whatever, right? And another trend would be especially now because of TikTok.
Yep.
Right? A lot of people are using TikTok. Almost everyone knows what TikTok is.
Yeah.
For my generation, at least. So some TikTok trends can be pretty stupid, honestly.
And dangerous.
And dangerous. There was this one trend where you'd have to blindfold your friend and then ask them to jump, right?
Yeah.
And then you kick their legs.
And then you kick the back of their legs and then they would fall backwards.
I don't get it.
Honestly, I don't get it also sometimes.
But people do it because it's a challenge.
It's a challenge. And it's human instinct to not be left behind from the group, So you want to feel included. You want to feel, you want to feel popular, right? So you would do whatever it takes to get to feel that sense of validation. Yeah.
How do children seek help once they find out that they are in these risks?
Well, at the moment, I think, like you said, the study has shown that children generally, 2 out of 5, won't seek help. And so one of the ways that we could do is, number one, is to have open communication between the parents and have discussions. Parents can have discussions with their children about the risks and harms. But also, I think we cannot just talk about the risks and harms, but also about the good things they can use the internet for, you know, because there's so much learning to be out there. But what is the limit, you know? Parents have said that 75% of parents say they do have limits and they do have rules, but you're not there 24 hours. Yeah. So there's no way you could monitor your children 24 hours on what they're doing in the net, particularly now when both parents are working. And in some cases, we know that like many of the PPR children, the parents are not at home at all because they are doing 2 jobs. So the kids are really on their own. So how then do you build that the knowledge and the resilience in these children to take care?
I'm pretty sure some parents listening, they would say, you see, this is why I check your phones every week. You know, it's because of these studies. So should parents start? I mean, a lot of parents do it already. Do these findings justify, you know, parents constantly monitoring, the helicopter parents who are just constantly monitoring what their children do? Yeah. Should parents check children's WhatsApps on a daily basis? Should parents go through internet, children's internet search history?
57.5% of parents said they do, check their children's social media. Yeah. So I will let the child answer that question.
Honestly, to the parents doing it, I think you should stop immediately. And honestly, no.
Doesn't build trust.
Auntie Wong said, it does not build trust. When you check your children's messages, you check your children's search history, that is not trust, you know, that's control. And through that, your children will want to rebel even more.
And I think there was one, sentence that a teenage child said, and was that the strictest parents create the sneakiest kids. And the 100% of the kids agree with us.
Yeah, I totally agree with that as well. You know, I think it's this idea, right? Like you said, you can remember when I was younger, even maybe 10, 15 years ago, if my parents say don't skip school, then I want to skip school. If my parents say don't go to the cyber cafe, then I'm like, okay, I'm going to the cyber cafe later, because I don't like rules. I don't like that you don't trust me.
Yeah. So we're asking parents, let's be more positive about it and not, you stop using the word don't, you know? I mean, let's do it in a more positive way. Why, explain to the children why they shouldn't be doing this, you know, and why shouldn't a 5-year-old be having an Instagram, you know, account or whatever.
Right. Because us children, we value our privacy as well, like the parents, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Your children might not know what you're doing every day. So how is it fair that you know what us children are doing?
But then parents would say, no, you're a child. You listen to me. I'm an adult. I can do what I want.
Right, exactly. And it's that mindset, and it's that saying, you know, that makes children want to resent their parents even more, to have their own lives online. So I guess that's the main reason why we see so many children are having such bad experiences and that they don't want to share with anyone. It's because their parents would say that to them, you know, their parents would want to
take away the phone.
Just take away their phones and start checking their messages and just breach their privacy, right? So as a child, and from our past engagement groups, every child, right? Yeah. We all value our own privacy and we want the parents to trust us
to respect
our privacy, respect our boundaries.
So then what is the solution? How do we help children better understand if we are not supposed to monitor them? What do we do?
Actually, we need to be able to balance the children's rights to information, because that's the way they get their information, is through the internet nowadays. And I think their access to information, their privacy, as Yukin said, is so important to children that there's a level of trust between the parents and the child. And so you have to keep children informed, and you know, we have to be able to talk about risk to children so that they can make better choices, you know, when they go online. And those same things that they learn is done offline. If you're a child who knows what is good and bad, what they should see and what they shouldn't see, if they know how to make good choices offline, they will also be able to do it when they're online, you know.
And But just to be clear here, when you talk about giving them the knowledge and then letting them make, you know, make informed decisions for themselves, I guess we are talking about a certain age group, right? Because when it comes to a six-year-old or a seven-year-old, I'm guessing in those circumstances, it will be more okay, you know, to be more perhaps strict, perhaps monitor the children a little bit more. I don't know. I'm just trying to think of what parents might be, you know, thinking in these situations.
Well, even if they're very young, I mean, of course, teenagers is easier to talk to them. But even if they're very young in the early years, it is important also for parents to be able to reason out with the child and tell the child, not just say no.
Yeah, exactly. What you want to say, like that, what Datin Wan was saying previously, you know, although they are 6 years old, they may encounter the dangers around them. They may encounter predatory behavior. So I don't see why that's not, their age should not be a reason for parents to not talk to their children about it, you know? About, I mean, yes, it'll be uncomfortable for both the parent and the child, but what matters here is that the children understand and can identify what might be dangerous for them online, what might be predatory behavior, what might be cyberbullying, so that they can, you know, protect themselves from it. Even in schools, we're not really learning about the dangers online in today's world, you know. There's no set syllabus on identifying the dangers online. There's no textbook that tells you what is cyberbullying and what is predatory behavior.
I think, like Yukin said, the syllabus for ICT, there is a syllabus for ICT, but there's nothing on how to be safe online, you know. So I think there's a lot of things that other people, it's a community effort. And of course, then the government comes in with the laws and policies.
And what sort of laws and policies do you think need to be introduced?
We do have, I think, a national plan of action for online child protection, which was actually through the Ministry of Communications and also the Ministry of Women, Family and Community Development. So we hope that's going to be revisited. There is talk of, through the Ministry of Communications, of a specific law on cyberbullying, because it's so rampant now that there should be a law just to tackle cyberbullying.
Okay, we only have a couple of minutes left. Before I let you guys go, do you all have a final message, perhaps to young people that might be listening or parents that might be listening on how we can maneuver this tricky situation?
Like, to just put it too simply, parents, you need to trust your children more. And by trust, that means equip them with the skills they need to keep themselves safe online. And with that trust, right, your parents can rest easy, you know, that your child knows what to do online. And for parents also to, you know, share some resources for their children. If any of their children are actually facing any issues online or they need someone to talk to, there's a few helplines you can go to. One of them would be Talian Kase or Childline, which the number is 15999. Right, and another newly launched hotline would also be the Buddy Bear hotline, which is 1-800-18-BEAR. So it's 1-800-18-2327. And through resources like that, right, they're actually trained professionals that will help your children, that will can talk to your children and help them go through what they're going through.
But we also have a competition, I think, a challenge for the children, which I think if the parents can work with the children to do this challenge. I think you can highlight that.
Right. So currently, after the report launch, we actually also launched this competition, right, for children to advocate for their safety online.
That sounds interesting.
So what you have to do is you have to produce a 1-minute video about how you as a child can stay safe online. And then you can get your parents or your siblings involved as well. And then you would actually...
there are three themes, I think.
Yeah, there are three themes. There's on sexual abuse, harassment and exploitation.
And cyberbullying.
And cyberbullying as well.
And also hate speech. Apparently that was an issue that came up.
So how do we join this competition?
Okay, so you just have to create the video one and then... you would have to fill in the register and consent form on Childline Foundation's Instagram bio. So Childline Foundation is at Childline Foundation My. You can also find them on Facebook as well.
And UNICEF.
And UNICEF Malaysia is also on UNICEF Malaysia's Facebook and Instagram. So all you have to do is fill up the register online on the form given. And then just make sure they've given consent and their parents know that they're joining. And then also if, you know, because of how young they are, we understand also that because of their age, predators could use this as an opportunity to find younger accounts.
Yeah.
So what they could do is actually send their videos and entries to UNICEF, to Childline Foundation. And then Childline Foundation would actually post it for them. So that you know they can still remain somewhat anonymous online.
Yeah.
Prices include book vouchers up to 200 ringgit. So please do join.
And for the adults, I think I just have this to say. Basically, do download the report. It's on UNICEF Malaysia's website and also on Childline Foundation on our Facebook page as well. So it's a very interesting report. This we have the short version, but we also have the 78 pages. Yeah, so that will give you a very good insight into what your children are doing on social media.
Okay, fantastic. Yukin, Datin Wong, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
That was Datin Wong, the Honorary Project Director of the Childline Foundation, and Lim Yukin, who is a Childline's child advocate and also the EXO of the PJ Child Council. And we were having a conversation on the use of social media by children and adolescents in the region and how we can better protect them when they go online. So if you missed any part of this conversation or any previous Live and Learn episodes, you can download the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or you can subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Just search BFM Live and Learn. Until next time, I'm Darshan Johan, and this has been Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.